So I just want to start off by acknowledging, so my name is Megan Morris. I am currently at Brigham Women's Hospital, the Center for Surgery and Public Health, and Harvard Medical School, but I previously was at Mayo Clinic, and that's actually where most of this research was done. So today I will be taking what the previous people have, speakers have been talking about at the macro level and take it down to the organization level. So I have no disclosures, and just to start off, I'm preaching to the choir here. So we know that patients with disabilities experience disparities in access and receipt of high-quality patient-centered care, and that these disparities are due to factors at multiple levels, including factors at the organization level, so, for example, inaccessible facilities, and at the provider level, for example, provider biases and stigma towards people with disabilities. So how do we address disabilities? So Amy Kilborn has this model. There's three different stages. So first, we need to detect the disparity. Then we understand the underlying determinants or factors that contribute to these disparities. And then finally, get to reducing, intervening. How do we decrease these disparities, promote equity and care? And I would argue that we all want to get to this reducing phase. That's our ultimate goal. And when I was starting out, that's where I wanted to get, and I'll tell a little story. So I did my postdoc here in Chicago, and I did a study where it was a pilot study where I was tracking people who had language disabilities, aphasia from strokes, and I was following them to their medical appointments and videotaping to look at patient-provider communication and provider-level factors that contribute to potential disparities in care. But it was really hard. So I was recruiting people and then contacting their providers, and it was just, it was not sustainable. We did a small project, and I would have loved to do a much larger project and look at other populations, but I ran into the problem of healthcare organizations often do not systematically collect information on patients' disability, so I couldn't actually go to a healthcare system and say, okay, every time you have a patient with a communication disability, let me in and I would like to videotape it. I couldn't do that. So that led me to my current research of I needed to step back and look at the detecting phase and think about, again, how do we identify and address disparities? Healthcare organizations really, really need to be documenting who does and does not have a disability. So like I said, healthcare organizations often do not systematically collect disability status. You know, oftentimes you'll say an intake forms, a question here and there. There are multiple policy recommendations for collection. So we have a joint commission report that was put out in 2010. And then previous speakers have discussed Section 4302 of the Affordable Care Act, which we'll talk about a little bit in a second. So there's two purposes for these questions. So the first one is to identify potential healthcare disparities, and then the second one is to identify patients who would benefit from healthcare accommodations. So again, a little bit more on Section 4302. It recommends the documentation of patients' race, ethnicity, sex, primary language, and disability status. Woohoo! And following the passage of the ACA, Department of Health and Human Services released six recommended disability questions. And you have seen these questions multiple times this morning. These are the six ACS questions from the census, and I will not go through those because the previous speakers have gone through these questions. So my question with these set of questions, they are fantastic, although I would maybe someone argue with me. Looking at population estimates of disabilities. And so my question was, are these really going to be the most appropriate questions at an organization level to do our two things? Track disparities at an organization level, and then identify patients who require healthcare accommodations. So the aim of my study was to engage key stakeholders in identifying disability status questions for the healthcare organizations to use. And there was two phases. The first phase, I did focus groups with patients with disabilities and caregivers, and I did interviews with physicians. And then our phase two was an online modified Delphi approach with an expert panel. And just one piece, I will be using the term patients instead of persons with disabilities because within the healthcare setting, that's just the term they're called. They're all patients, so we understand who they are. So our persons with disabilities, I recruited individuals from disability advocacy groups, state rehabilitation services, and patient support groups in the southeastern Minnesota area. Recruited people from a range of disabilities. We did not restrict our disabilities. And then physicians we recruited from local hospitals and clinic, and then also the Health Research and Education Trust, the HRET, which is affiliated with the American Hospital Association, recruited through their newsletter. And we recruited a range of medical specialties. So our focus groups, we organize them loosely around types of disabilities, put people with mental health disabilities, in the same group, people with acquired disabilities, et cetera. And then our physicians participate in phone or in-person interviews. We had a semi-structured interview guide that was actually very similar across the focus groups and interviews. So the basic question was, from the patient's perspective, said, ask the question of, when you go into the doctor's office, what information do you want them to know about you and your disability before they walk into that exam room? And then we would flip it for our physicians. After we have that discussion, we would present the 6 recommended questions and ask about their thoughts of those questions. For our analysis, we conducted an inductive thematic analysis, reviewed the transcripts, and collaboratively developed a list of codes, double-coded all transcripts, reconciling discrepancies through consensus, inputted the data into NVivo, a data management software, and then developed themes from our coded data. For our results, we had 54 patients and caregivers participate. We had 8 focus groups from a very, very, very wide range of disabilities. And then we had 15 physicians participate in interviews, and they were from a range of medical specialties. We had 2 things. The first one was accommodations that patients and physicians desired. I will not go into that today. I will focus on the second theme, which was the discussion of the 6 recommended questions. So participants, both patients and physicians, characterized the 6 questions as comprehensive and appropriate. Very interesting, patients and caregivers had a difficult time distinguishing between medical history and accommodations. So it'd say, what would you want your doctor to know about you before you walked in the room? They would say, oh, I have a mobility disability, I use a wheelchair, I need a height adjustable exam table. Oh, and by the way, I take these medications and I have these allergies. Well, the medications and allergies, important information, but that information is likely being collected in other ways, and they don't necessarily need to be in a disability question. On the other hand, physicians had a difficult time distinguishing between care planning and accommodations. Say, yes, I would want to know if my patient has a visual disability, and, oh, I want to know about their religion, I want to know about their social environment at home. Do they, again, really important information might not be the same questions we would want for our disability questions. They had a few suggestions for the 6 questions, categories for autism, communication disabilities, and learning disabilities. Some of the questions have a qualifier because of a physical, mental, or emotional condition. They thought that was a little verbose. And it was very interesting. They were not interested in the ADL and IADL questions. As one participant said, she was a caregiver, she said, if you ask me if I'm thirsty, you better be prepared with a glass of water. If you ask me if I have difficulty doing errands alone, and you're my podiatrist, you better be prepared to address that need. And they didn't think that their podiatrist, their cardiologist, necessarily had the tools to be able to address some of their community needs. So we modified the 6 questions. We expanded to 8. And you can see there, very similar to original questions, so hearing, seeing, mobility, cognition, fine motor, learning, communication, and autism. So our second phase was our Delphi expert panel. So we recruited 17 experts to participate, and we recruited a wide range of people. So we had disability researchers in measurement, education, health and healthcare disparities, and then researchers in documentation of race and ethnicity and LGBT status, by healthcare organizations. We had representatives from disability advocacy organizations and healthcare providers. We had two rounds of an online survey, which we ran through REDCap. During our first round of the Delphi, we presented 31 questions. These questions included the recommended six ACS questions, our modified questions from phase one, and then we supplemented it with other questions from national surveys. We had the experts rate the questions based on four different areas. So again, care planning and medical history, which is came up a lot in our focus groups and interviews, but not really the purpose of these questions. And then our two other purposes of identifying patients who benefit from accommodations and those who could experience disparities in care. Then we allowed an open response option. For our analysis for our first round, we grouped the grouped all the 31 questions into nine categories based on disability types: cognition, mental health, mobility, fine motor, ADL, vision, hearing, communication, and learning. We eliminated the question in each category that rated the lowest on accommodation and tracking quality of care, which is our two purposes. And then we created descriptive summaries of the comments and ratings. In our second round, we presented our first round results, which included a general summary of all the comments, and then we did specific summaries of each category of disability. So all of the hearing questions were grouped together with a summary of the ratings and the comments for the hearing questions. Then out of our remaining 22 questions, we had the experts rank order the top 10 questions based on importance for inclusion. For our results, we had six questions raised to the top as mandatory questions with four additional highly recommended questions. Very interesting, after we came up with our six mandatory questions, we went back to the literature, and lo and behold, we ended up with questions that were pretty much identical to the disability questions recommended by the United States, or UN, Washington Group on Disability Statistics. We did not reach consensus on the wording of a few of the questions, particularly communication, learning, social, and overall screening question. So here are our mandatory questions. Again, we still have our visual disabilities, hearing disabilities, mobility, cognition, and then added back the ADL question for dressing and bathing. And then our communication, again, we have not reached consensus yet for which communication question to use. Our highly recommended questions, we have again our doing errands alone, so our IADL question, and then a learning social disability question, and then it was very interesting, it came up both in our focus groups, in our interviews, and expert panel, they wanted an overall screening question. So this is an example, wording, due to a disability, do you need an additional assistance or accommodation during your visit, which has its challenges, which we can discuss later. So the next steps, we are currently in the midst of doing cognitive interviews with the questions that, again, we have a couple options of wording. If anyone's in the Boston area and interested in participating, let me know. And then we have a grant under review looking at developing methods for implementing the questions. We could come up with the most beautiful questions in the world, but if no one's going to use them, then we're out of luck. So in conclusion, we did a rigorous process of engaging multiple stakeholders in developing questions for healthcare organizations to use. There are no perfect questions, and we could, again, rip these questions apart, and there's so many more questions to add, but we believe that this is a starting point, and we just need to move forward and see how they work. So acknowledged funding through the fellowship through National Institute of Disability Independent Living and Rehabilitation Research. And I will end.
Megan, you have 1 minute left. Would you mind going back and just reading some of the questions that were on your slide?
Okay.
For the audience, thank you.
Yep. So our mandatory questions were, are you blind or do you have serious difficulty seeing even when wearing glasses? Number two, are you deaf or have serious difficulty hearing? Number three, do you have serious difficulty walking or climbing stairs? Number four, do you have difficulty remembering or concentrating? Number five, do you have difficulty dressing or bathing? And then our communication questions are using your customary usual language. Do you have difficulty saying or understanding words or sentences? And then the second one is using your customary or usual language. Do you have difficulty communicating, for example, understanding or being understood? And then because of a physical, mental, or emotional condition, do you have difficulty doing errands alone, such as visiting a doctor's office or shopping? Learning disability, have you been diagnosed with a learning disability? Do you have difficulty reading or writing? And then a question that combines both of those. And then a social disability, do you have you been diagnosed with autism or autism spectrum disorder? And then do you have difficulty understanding social situations? So, all right.